Welcome to the Connected Podcast. We're talking to James Hanley today about AI and the impacts on architecture and design firms for the future. There are some exciting things, but also some considerations in how we can also work with digital and ensure that we have a balanced life as well. So let's head on in. Welcome to the Be Connected Podcast. We have James Hanley here today, and we're going to be talking about the future of AI, both in architecture and the built environment as a whole. So tell us a little bit about where you're at the moment and a bit of your background and story and what's led you to where you are today.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me. I am week two into my role as Chief Technology Officer for FK Australia. I did 5 years, like yourself, at Grey Puck Centre as their sort of digital delivery design technology manager, which was sort of the IT and technology side. A lot of people don't know, but I actually started my career as a technologist, like a technician. So I joined a practice and had to learn Revit very quickly in the face of deadlines and just became really good at that technology. And so then I sort of moved.
You worked in the UK, you've worked in New Zealand, you've worked for a lot of globally great firms as well.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So I sort of just followed sort of when I was young and had the ability to sort of followed wherever I wanted to go in terms of jobs and roles, etc. So through that course, I sort of just worked my way through into the technology side and the business support side of a business, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I sort of enjoy being able to make up my own pathway instead of sort of that traditional architectural pathway. And that's landed me at FK today, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Brilliant. And I mean, you've also written a book on AI as well. So do you want to tell us the name of that and what it's about?
Yeah, sure. So I wrote this book called Remaining Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. And I sort of had a penny drop moment. My wife was pregnant with our first child. And I sort of just thought, oh my God, I'm researching all this technology and artificial intelligence every night, 5 nights a week. And I was thinking, like, what world am I going to be bringing kids into? Mm-hmm. So I sort of just ended up writing this book around, hey, let's not forget that we're all humans trying to do the same thing day in, day out. We struggle with stress and burnout, and we're all trying to climb ladders and careers and be successful. How do we just sort of take a break and manage a healthy relationship with technology? And then also, I'm very cognizant that how do I portray my relationship with technology to my children?
Yes. So really important as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I both share the part that, you know, we like being out in nature. You get up at 4 or 3, is it?
Yeah, 4. Know. 4 is it early.
Yeah, I get up at 4:30 most days. You know, we're both very much about being outdoors and keeping fit, although you absolutely run rings around me with your ultramarathons and your 100K lunch. I thought when I had children, that's not happening for a little while now, but I see the light at the end of the tunnel. But I 100% agree. I mean, I think when you have small children, and we did our first podcast was actually with Meg Price, who's doing a PhD on AI and human flourishing. And really in that kind of opened up my brain around AI, and now it's become a massive part about what I do as well. But it is that. And that's a really hard thing. We see the behaviours of what children have and what that's doing. So even simple things like our house, we don't watch television during the week. We try to really limit that. The house we're in, it was really hard. We've just moved and they can get outside. But even cognizant of how much they see us sitting on our phones and doing that, I often say to my partner, I'm like, just put it down. Like, we don't need to look at it. So what were some of the things that you sort of identified in that and sort of some things you thought about?
Look, to your point, setting and maintaining boundaries around technology, no phones in the bedroom, no phones at the dinner table, a very set time, maybe 1 hour a night for TV. My kids are very young at 3 and 1, so that's not so much of an issue. But of a weekend, for example, getting outside, being in the yard, like not being connected to devices, like maintaining your relationship with nature instead of being in the doctor's office every day for supplements. Like just those things that when you sort of click, they just, that is pretty logical, but you sort of get so tied up. And especially in our industry where everything's a deadline, everything's a race, people just hit burnout so quick and then they wonder why. Like, and why they get sick and why they get run down. So it was just about, like, how do you sort of maintain relationships with people that are close to you and at distance? I've got a brother in the UK, so technology is actually amazing for that. But then how do I maintain a relationship with my family closer to home? Yeah. How do I sort of manage my time between work and switching off and just being really mindful of being healthy?
I kind of look at digital in a way, and we're going to talk about how amazing it is and all these things are going to go. But I look at it, you know, and we're doing a few courses and part of our Beyond Academy on this and peak performance type stuff. You can imagine digital fatigue coming into your brain and doing those types of things and habits to build around that. But if you think about it, you know, our phones have become like sugar, right?
Yeah.
They're on us all the time. We're doing it. There's all these things. Everything's built to get us addicted to it. We've changed our entire behavior. In some ways, you also have to be careful what you eat, what you do when you're consuming sugar, what it does to your body. You're doing the same thing to your brain, right? Like if you pick up your phone in the morning and you're looking at social media, you can say goodbye to about a lot of your mental energy has already gone. You've already started your day, not in a peak performance type of thing. But look, that's a whole other thing. You and I can have a whole other discussion on peak performance and digital management. It's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about AI. Obviously today, you know, AI is this thing that's been around since the 50s, but we're probably seeing it more and more. You know, I was just talking to somebody. We've just built an entire website in a day type stuff. Yeah. Not quite in a day, but instead of it taking 6 months to build the last one, now it's just something you can do things quite quickly. That's one example. I think now in the last, you know, I've been running a business for 2.5 years. I think in that time, now where AI is and the speed of which it is changing, you can't be just figuring out where it is. I would predict that where we are today and where we are in 5 years by 2030 is going to be more expedited than where the impact of social media and our phones has had. And it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be interesting also we can talk about at the end and what a play game is going to play on our brains as well. But let's talk a little bit about where you see AI coming into, and we're going to talk in architecture because that's mainly where you've been, but I think the built environment in general, so engineers and builders and people like that too.
Yeah, definitely. Look, as you pointed out, I've spent my career in the architecture space, so it's quite easy to talk to that. Obviously, at the moment, I think architecture is well and truly focused on early stage visualization. I've been, and it was amazing, right? I think it was amazing because we were always told that creative jobs were going to be the last to automate and the last at risk. And AI sort of came out and threw that on its head almost immediately. Like you could put into any sort of prompt engine, generate me a building with curves, flowing facade, et cetera, and you got that back. And it was this real like wow and sort of holy crap moment all at once. These architects were like, wow, this is amazing. And then the dust settled, and they're like, it's not that useful. But then those AI platforms have progressed so quickly in sort of 12 to 24 months that you're now getting really high-end visuals out of that. And I think businesses, I think the glean has worn off that. I think we've been saying, well, what else can it do? What else can it do? So at the outset, image generation was amazing. And I think that's where architects have been focused on as an efficiency point of view. Can my visualizer or visualization team get 10 different versions of this image out? And absolutely there's efficiency there, whereas once upon a time you'd have to
God, it's taking days and hundreds of dollars. And I think the thing is, though, I think the second part to this is around expectations, you know, because now we're not only just having a world where that with the architects being able to use it as a tool now, I think what's happening is we're going to see the difference in what clients expect. And I mean, design is never valued in comparison as much as where others are. The amount of time and I work with everybody and I love the architect. I love everybody. The architects do spend the most amount of time doing the most amount of details for the least. Where that is that I can see that either means it's going to position people, designers, in a much better way to run things efficiently, or it's going to flip and clients are going to sit there and go, I want to see the 20 versions.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I haven't quite landed on which way I think it's going to go.
I will watch.
It empowers architects to do a lot more, but then the devil is in the detail. Like you're then producing more for the same fees you were yesterday. And that's what I've been talking to architects. Like you're not necessarily being paid to generate all this extra content that in some ways, when you go into an AI platform and ask it to give me a render of a building or an image, some architects I've seen get exactly what they're after quite quickly. And they're like, oh, AI is amazing. I've seen other architects that come back to me on a Tuesday morning saying, James, I tried to drive this thing and I ended up further away from my design intent and this thing's useless. So there's this whole education about how to drive what is seemingly a very simple piece of technology, but you need to know how to drive it quite intimately.
And there's still the process. It's absolutely. A bit like I was using something the other day to produce something, and it was like, great, that's great. And then other times I'm like prompting, and I'm like, it's not getting me what I want. Kind of know what the process that you need to do and start with is, and that's what might hopefully be replaced. But I think it will be very interesting how that comes along. Now, I mean, probably right now, we spoke about this the other day, a lot of the wins can probably be on the operational side of the business with AI at the present. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. I think a lot of businesses are still focused on that design side, but I think you've actually got so much, whatever you want to call it, like low-hanging fruit in an architecture practice. Like I'm sitting here looking at all of our policies and procedures as a new starter. So I was like, this is ideal to have this chat right now because I'm 6 days into a job. You know, like, wouldn't it be amazing if I just had some sort of agent or co-pilot to sit there and be like, hey, I'm looking for our paid parental leave policy. Where is it? Oh, bang, here it is. This is what it's got. This is when you can access it, et cetera.
Absolutely.
So it's, from an onboarding point of view, I think AI has a mile of capability in terms of helping us digest information and data across an architectural practice. Absolutely. So I think business operations has actually got a whole sort of raft of stuff that they could be doing so much more efficiently.
Like even in very simple terms, and I would be surprised if people aren't doing this currently, especially if you're using something like Copilot, which will use it in your own system and enable you to do that, and there's heaps of others, but it depends on your security. That'll be the other thing we'll get into in a minute. But, you know, you've got that ability to draw on. I know I've got a person, a friend of mine who's in sales, nothing to do with architecture, and she's like, oh, yeah, let's bring up the tenders that we've done for this and proposals we've done for this. If you think about how many hours it would take a partner to sit down, oh, we've got to go into this folder, find their last, what are the last three submissions that we did on this? Like over time, you would have and be able to, you should be able to. And if people aren't doing that today, that's the first thing that should be fixed.
Oh, but even on the design side, right, if you are bidding for a competition, you can say, right, don't write me a methodology statement. I will craft that bespoke as a human to this project, to this contract. But it's a science project. Please dig through my asset library and find me the last five science projects we did. Order them by size, order them by Green Star deliverable, and tell me something notable about each of them.
Yeah.
And like it's that information. And this is where we sort of talk about AI being the great leveler. If you're a smaller practice, but you know how to interact and use your data, you can start to level up and compete with those bigger companies that would be sitting on an absolute treasure trove and a mountain of data, but just can't get a handle on it at the moment.
Yeah. And I actually think that's where we're at right now. I think in 6 months' time to 12 months' time, we won't necessarily be in this position. Mm-hmm. But I think in, you know, mid of 2025, if firms, smaller firms are putting their head into AI, they have the ability to really expedite and be able to compete. I think over time, I'm noticing bigger firms just because there's a lot more complexity. Oh, we have to get our heads around. And, you know, we've been there, a lot more processes of getting things passed versus the smaller firms who've got the director there. Yeah, we've got, oh, that looks great. Go. Off we go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
It's a bit more agile, but they have to be putting their heads into it as well. And I think that's the other thing we spoke about before we started chatting that you mentioned. Was that also we're now in a world where we have a new generation, and it's not. I think it's also people who want to put their head in and realize, AI is just not going to be a tool. This is going to change how we work and how businesses operate. Is that there's a new generation coming in and being able to produce a lot more in a lot less time. But if they're working in an environment where that's not enabled, there's a lot of inefficiency there, but probably also a lot of disillusionment. Whereas for a smaller firm who might be able to do that, they might be able to come in. I think you've had some situations yourself. You might not be able to mention the firms, but some situations where you've had people come in yourself. Is that correct?
Well, you are right. There is this, I mean, I'm of the digital native generation. I finished school in 2003. That's as the internet was firing up, all these sorts of things, great technology. Whereas the kids coming out of university today are just so deeply, like their world is digital, right?
Yeah.
And so they're coming into businesses, and I think there's an amazing opportunity for that cross-pollination, cross-training. The younger kids can teach the older generation about AI. The older generation can teach, and they so desperately need to do this, hey, this is what you're going to encounter when you go out onto site, but the cranky old builder that is looking at your drawing that you and AI generated and can't make heads or tails of where the stair starts. So I think they've got this knowledge of like 30, 40 years of their craft and how to build a building. Yeah. They need to cross-pollinate that. But I think there's also this risk, and it's been a talking point in our industry, in the design industry for a number of years, about brain drain. If I'm looking to hire at the moment, and this could be said for most practices out there, if I'm looking to hire a graduate who is very tech savvy, getting into the AI space, they're generally going to be appointed into a practice and said, hey, here is a 40-story tower we're working on, and here's the door schedule in Revit. Go do the door schedule. I'll see you in 6 months. Kids don't want to do that. I've spoken to a lot of people that are like, well, that's how I learned to do it. So you've got to learn by doing the reps. I'm like, learning by doing the reps is legacy. It was fit for purpose back at that time. But now that technology has evolved, you can't afford to push that method of training on people because they'll just get upset and leave. You've got an enormous startup economy out there in the construction space. Kids will go there and get paid, my God, 3-4 times what they'll get paid in the design industry. So we've got to be careful.
You can say that wasn't the case across all.
I know. So we've got to be really careful.
Absolutely. I think the thing is that you, I think the other thing is that you actually want the people who are like that, but it's in the cultural part to be able to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
On the other side, though, I mean, then you're getting to the whole learning space and how people learn and all of that type of stuff. Yeah. But, you know, there is a practical element there, but at the same time, I don't think people have the concentration space to sit there and do that at the same time. There'll be more mistakes. And honestly, if you don't, if you can't work out how to make AI do your door schedules, and that would be your job, that would be the first bloody thing you would be, it would be automating.
Yeah.
But that's the point. The other side of it is then they're not getting into the details. So, you know, I was talking to a project manager the other day. They're using, obviously, you know, AI of certain part, you know, to read those things, to be able to pull it out, to be able to do that, making the job a lot quicker. However, it means they're not getting familiar with the small details. If you're putting something that's really, really complex into AI, it's not going to give you, it's not going to give you the high-level version. It's going to give you the headlines. It's not going to give you in detail.
Yeah.
So I think there is two elements there that, and this is what I'm going to be very interested to see, how AI changes the way that we approach how we work and what we do, right? Yeah. Everybody walks around their phone. It's sitting right next to me. Everybody pretty much is on their phone, the first thing they do. It'll be interesting to see how people realize this is an AI tool I can do, but how do I also make sure I think?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw some odd studies the other day. I haven't validated them, so let's be honest with that, where somebody was like, you know, AI has been proven to, you know, reduce people's intelligence.
Yeah.
But potentially, I'd be interested, and we're very early on, so those studies would not be validated in the scientific community. But at the same time, I get it. You could easily get into this and you don't get into as much detail.
You're right, because you, instead of going into a business and learning, you go into a business and you go straight into production, right, if you're using AI.
Yeah.
Because you're sort of saying, well, no, like you're going to work with this technology and it's going to help you do it, but you're not actually learning, well, what's required in that door schedule? Do I need this information? No. And AI is not going to tell you whether you need it or not. It's just going to give you what you essentially ask for. So I think I agree with you. We've got to be really careful that we don't lose that learning, especially in architecture. Like we're not talking about going to the supermarket. We're talking about building buildings that people live and work in that are meant to have lifespans of 50 to 75 plus years. And they're so, so complex. So you've got to be learning what you're doing continually.
Well, the other thing is, if you muck it up, you know, there's obviously been a building recently that obviously the structure fell down. And imagine, I'm not going to mention what and who, but, you know, those types of mistakes or not actually checking on those. And so that's where, still as humans or as experts, you are being paid to have that level of knowledge and to do it. Otherwise, you're putting yourself actually at risk of being replaced by AI. So it's still about building your knowledge and understanding. And I will say, I think, you know, even just using large language model AI, if you know what you're talking about, it's a lot easier to get the exact answer you need. If you don't know what you're talking about, you can get a high level, but there can be mistakes in there that you may not realize. Now, I think it'll continue to evolve and to change, but I think it will, it's changing what, even in our business, you know, we've pivoted to go, okay, the value proposition is here. Now the value proposition is that. And, you know, that's why we're building our own software.
Yeah.
So we're actually running the experiences versus actually, you know, doing the compliance, which is all part of it. But it's like, what's the value add versus what's going to be around? Yeah. And I think it's interesting if you listen out there, you know, the advice of some of the people out there is, if you want to have a profession now, what would you tell your kids to do? And I'd be 100% is you tell them to go and be a plumber or, you know, an electrician. Well, you know, they're all getting paid a lot more than the professionals, I can tell you that.
Yep.
And they're impossible to find. So it is one of those things. There are going to certain professions that will have less, and it probably means we're more hands-on.
Yeah.
But it means that if you're in professions like architecture, engineering, project management, you're still on site, you're still doing things. So we could actually end up with, James, a very interesting part that a lot of things can be done through that. So you might go back to learning a lot more on site. Who knows?
Yeah.
Can't define the future there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about sort of where we think, and, you know, we are not futurists. We don't have a glass but just as an opinion, where do you think architecture may be and look like if you're an architecture firm in 2030 and then 2040? How do you think firms might actually look?
Look, to be honest, I think 2030, you'll see minimal change. I think a lot of practices out there are still trying to understand what tools are out there. I think at the moment, the AI space is very much like the dot-com bubble. Everyone is trying to build something to make a quick buck and then get out. So, and this is what I see a lot of people, like, they're sort of saying, well, I'm trying to find an AI platform that can help me do X. And there's 100 of them. How do I find out which one's got staying power? Which one's going to be here in 5 years' time? So I think at the moment, in terms of our business models, the way our contracts are structured, the way we deal with data privacy and security and some of these big decisions on projects, I don't think there will be a lot of change in terms of the design side of architecture. Sure, we'll be working around the edges and looking at visualization and maybe some modeling, but by and large, because of the legal and the contractual responsibility, documentation will still be largely manual. Carried out by a human. By 2040, though, I think we'll start to see a larger shift towards, and it's funny, I talk about AI, but I also talk about automation. I think by 2040.
Is one of the, different.
But they're different because automation can be done completely without AI. Okay. So I think we will largely see a lot more design work farmed out to AI. And actually, farmed out is the wrong term. A lot of your architects will be partnering with an AI. I think you'll see agentic AI well and truly up and running by the 2040s, which means it will be you'll be able to sort of give it a multi-prompt to say, hey, I need you to go into software X, design this, take it into software Y, get a schedule out into software C, and then send it on to a contractor. So I think agentic AI will be a large player, but I think in terms of architecture, the next few years are pretty critical to understanding, well, how can we use our data? What responsibility do we have across a very large project team?
Yeah.
And where does that risk lie? So I think it's exciting. Don't get me wrong. I think the short-term view at the moment that I'm sort of hearing a lot is we're sort of just dabbling and we're doing a lot of testing, but we don't dare push it into production because there's a few risks. But I think that will change in the longer term by the 2040s to say, right, we understand that we can use AI for this. This is where the risk lies. This is where the reward lies. And this is who will benefit. And this is how we protect our data.
Yeah. So, for example, I mean, because I do want to talk about the documentation, because when I think about the architecture part, that is where most of the fee is. That is where most of the work is. Yep. And actually that. And the hard part there is, as you said, door schedules might be, if you might go to door schedule, that is millions of dollars, right? You do not want to get that wrong. I also find it interesting because when you're talking about it like that, there's two things that come to my mind. You know, how do we improve this and remove the really time-consuming things that really aren't, you know, as you said, graduates come in and people are just documented buildings for months and, you know. Whereas on the other side, then it's also then even if you've got graduates or somebody doing it, you need to have a good QA process too. So it'll be interesting on the other side how quality actually is implemented. But you won't be able to do quality if you don't know how to put a building together, right?
Yeah.
But is that for the documentation side, is that what's stopping it from being automated better?
Well, there's nothing stopping it right now. There are tools out there to automate documentation. I've spent the last sort of 12 months heavily looking and implementing a tool that does exactly that.
Yeah, right.
I think that I'll get shot down by every architect out there, but our industry has a glacial adoption rate when it comes to technology. We, the general, have spent decades mastering our craft and designing and sketching and all this sort of stuff. And I think at the moment we're tied to outdated, archaic desktop software. And I think we're starting to see now this sort of explosion of web-based, highly interactive, highly customizable tools.
Wow.
That might sort of finally shift the architecture industry away from you need to be running this massive software on your computer and drawing line work here and drawing line work there. And
oh, massive servers and cloud. Yeah.
So this takes me back to my sort of previous comment around sort of the pace of change in the 2030s and the 2040s. I still think we've got a few more years to actually realize that, hey, we might need to shift our investment from these big old softwares into something that's up and coming. And I include AI in that space. So I think and that's not even AI in terms of automating documentation. That's just software that you can use and download and run. But I think AI will become much more involved in that process in the future. Mm-hmm. But
how it can't be. I mean, at the end of the day, if you've got a building code and you can put it in there and you can say the dynamics of this, and we want the windows to be this, we need this much space, and the engineers need this, it could even be everybody inputs into it. I cannot imagine how that can't be done.
And that is coming now. There is a platform out there that is essentially text to BIM. I have a two, and you just type.
Do you mind telling me what it is? Because I'm just very
curious. It's called Hypar. Hypar. These people got together and just sort of said, look, we need to think about the next evolution of building information modeling. And it is now, they can go as far as text to BIM. I have a 10-story building and the bottom two stories are podium. And the model just generates right in front of you. Actually, it's a U-shaped building instead of a rectangular building. It's got two stories of car park and there's also windows on the eastern side. And this all generates in real time, and you can then take that back to your desktop modeling software. So it is happening. If you think about how much businesses have invested in upskilling and training and deploying their current software systems, can you think, like, they're staring at this technology going, this is great, but this is exciting, but actually I'm going to have to train and pay for all of my current staff to understand how this works and pay for this software. So I think that's where some of the delay is, that we're stuck with what we've gotten until something comes along that's nice and cheap. Well, we can't move. And that's not the best.
Yeah. And I think that's where we come back to, I think this is actually a time for, those more innovative, smaller practices who want to do those types of things, could be testing and doing that. You still need those people who know what they're doing to make sure and is in a thoroughly checking.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like, it'll be very interesting where the risk and the liabilities and all of that for the insurances and stuff like that. So I think QA is just going to become a massive part. But
definitely.
To do QA properly, you can't just be reviewing things. You need to be understanding. Yeah. So again, AI is only there to really assist people and to do that. But I mean, I think that's because that was one of the reasons I reached out to you, because I was like, this has got to be. This has to be, at the end of the day, if AI is about formulas and things like this, half of this is a formula, right? But if you're building, you're like, right, I need a core, we need to know this, we need the offsets from here, we've got these parameters. And I just sort of look and I go, surely that is something that will be prompted, can be prompted in an assisted way with AI.
And I think that's what's exciting. I can see the platforms that are coming out that are very much, here's my text and I get some geometry back. I get a model modeling design. What's exciting for me though is I want to go the other way. I want to upload a drawing into Copilot or into whatever platform the AI is going to be and say, right, here is my building code of Australia and my national construction code. Are my handrails up to standard? Is this stair accurate for a class 2 building? Like, I want to do that level of QA because at the moment, that's where the inefficiency is. You've got people in the Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, like, if I want to do a drawing review here, I've got to find the guy that's been here for 40 odd years and knows the construction code inside out and say, hey, can I schedule you for a review? Oh, you're already doing 10 this week. Cool. I got to do it next week. That there's a huge inefficiency gap there.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, I would love to see AI in that space.
So is that the biggest, I mean, because obviously everybody was on drawing boards and they went to CAD and, you know, then they've gone to 3D SketchUp and then into Revit. You know, surely Autodesk is such a big organization. It must be doing something. Otherwise it knows it's going to get toppled.
Yeah.
So or it doesn't care because it's now Microsoft and can be.
No, look, I was lucky enough to be at their annual conference a year or two ago, and they released Autodesk AI. There wasn't much around what that was, even if you go digging, but it just seems, I think I agree with you, they are collecting so much data off our models because our models are hosted in their cloud and terms and conditions and all this sort of stuff that they surely must be building something in the background. I just don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know what they are essentially building.
Yeah.
All the way.
And as you said, it's a bit more complicated than, you know, a large language model you are. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Honestly, we'll find that out. But that's where I'm interested, I think, in the next 5 years. It will be very interesting. And, you know, that's why I've sort of said I don't know if I feel like at the moment architecture firms often judge themselves by the size and amount of people that they have. And I think actually they're better to be looking at the size and the caliber of projects that they're working on. And, you know, the podcast we just did before this was all around marketing and understand who you're helping and doing that. And hopefully that's the other thing, you know. My only, you know, like to be very open and honest, my only concern is how much will this shift to the builders? Because at the end of the day, I'm seeing a lot of things in the industry at the moment where we have, you know, early consultant interventions. We're getting builders on a lot earlier. Now, mind you, I've moved from Victoria to Queensland and it's a very, very different model up here. The builders, you know, rule up here in comparison. But at the end of the day, if you can't get it built, you don't have a project. So I would be very interested. I've seen a lot more firms and a lot more builders, like large scale builders, taking on a little bit more of that BIM. As well, and I know you've had to do a lot of that BIM management planning, things like that. What's your observations on what's sort of happening?
Look, I definitely see that continuing. So I've worked across, especially New Zealand and Australia, where you've got a lot of early contractor involvement because you want to set out, you have your pre-construction and construction BIM execution plan, or your design BIM and your construction BIM.
Yeah.
So I don't see that changing at the moment. I think if you're looking at it through a lens of AI, it'll sort of be, well, let the architect do whatever they need to do to meet their deadlines and get the drawings and the model across. And then your contractors will basically use their systems to do the same thing to get it built.
Yeah.
So I think there's a very clear definition of ownership there in terms of when you hand over to construction and delivery.
Yeah.
In terms of what technology you're using. I know there's some large contractors out there that are using AI on site at the moment to basically, there's a platform some of them use called Drone Deploy, and they fly the drone over the site every 24 hours and they can track mounds of soil and deliverables that are being dumped on site. They can basically walk through with cameras on their hard hat to get all of their daily site checks, feed that video into their AI engines and understand what's happening with progress and look at that against Gantt charts.
Wow.
So it's all working there, right? And on the design side, that doesn't bother me at all. So I need to be free to use whatever technology I need to meet my deliverables and my data requirements. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And I think that's like, you know, you get sent people to go and do site visits to meet and you're like, why would you do that? Like, put a bloody camera there and all sorted out in 2 seconds.
Put a drone up in the sky and watch the video on the way home on the bus. Like,
there you go. Yeah, the things that I do on the run. All right, so we've talked a little bit about that as well. How do you think then having this as a tool will actually help architects and designers to actually achieve more or be able to bring more of their creativity?
So, that last sentence is really important, right? I think there's been all this talk about how it's going to make us more efficient and we can do more and all this sort of stuff. And that's cool, but do I really want to do more? Like, I don't know about you. Like, I'm pretty busy at the moment, right? I'm kind of happy with that. But if I was an architect, I would be excited by AI in the fact that I can, and again, we've probably heard this a lot as well, I can farm out the more menial tasks like door schedules, that sort of stuff, and I can actually use what I was trained in university to do, which is use my brain for creativity and creative problem solving.
Yeah.
And I said that to a bunch of graduates just the other day here because I was showing them some of the stuff I've been playing around with AI. And it's like, I want to pay you to be the best possible designer you can be and to use your creative problem solving to identify and solve a design problem. I don't want to pay you to sit in Excel or in Revit or whatever it is and organize lines on a screen. That's what we want to automate. And that goes back to the cliche saying about being efficient and doing more. But that's where I'd be excited about. It's paying people to be creative because at the moment, AI can't replicate that. I think it can. Well,
and it's always the hard thing, isn't it? You bring these, you know, you interview somebody and they've done 5 years of architecture and then you tell them, we're just going to sit you at a desk and you're going to draw a bunch of lines and then a document. You won't be doing any design work for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And you see their soul literally die.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I'm not laughing at that. It shouldn't be. It's like, it is really, really difficult. They've got to learn how it goes together because at the same time, you can look a bunch of folios and you're thinking, okay, how is that building going to stand up? What was the purpose? Where is the design process? Like, where is it? You know, so going off and being able to do nice, pretty pictures is one thing, but actually making sure you're building a building that's going to be purposeful. Mm. But at the same time, if you can actually enable them to do, the architects' minds are amazing. I think they're the most amazing professionals. Like, to have big picture plus small detail to be able to visually conceptualize what they do. And whether you're a technician or not, you are an architect.
And I think that's where this technology is so exciting, right? Because if you, let's say you've got an architect that's put onto a competition, right, for a hospital. Competition is going to run for, I don't know, 8 weeks. Let's be realistic. How many floor plate options can an architect generate in 8 weeks? Okay. But then if you start talking about, and you can call this whatever you want, whether it's generative design, like AI, whatever it might be. But what if you were able to just say, hey, here's my bubble diagram, or here's a very, very rough concept plan. You need to focus on the patient areas and the outpatients and the chemical, the medicinal dispersory areas, like, and look at the orientation of the hospital on site for maximum daylight. Like, if you know your parameters and your rules for what you're trying to achieve, it must have 200 patient beds and et cetera, you can then generate 400 options.
Yeah.
Right. And then without that being overwhelming, you can then say, well, actually, I want to prioritize daylight potential into hospital. There's 3 options. I actually want to prioritize pedestrian accessibility. There's 2 options. So people used to get worried that, well, oh my goodness, you're going to generate 400 options and that's no better because the architect's going to have to spend time sifting through all of them. Use the technology to sift through them and then you get the best. Because I think what does excite me is that, is there a point in time where the property developer turns around and says, well, prove to me that this is the best layout. I'm a property developer and I want to fit as many one-bedroom apartments on this floor plate as possible.
Yeah.
If I was the property developer, they'd all be studio apartments with no windows, right? Maximum amount of dollars earned. But as a designer, they know that, hey, you want a mix of 2 beds and 3 beds and north-facing and balconies, etc. So if you know your constraints, you can turn around to your client or your property developer and say, hey, it's almost like in school when you have to show you're working out for mathematics.
Yeah.
Here's my answer and here's how I worked it out and this is the best and most optimal layout that's going to get you the best yield but keep your participants happy or your people that live there happy. So, use the technology not just to design but actually to prove why it's the best design.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how people keep their hand in drawing and doing those types of things because at the moment it's obviously more language model. By the way, have you ever heard of Whisper?
Yeah, have you? Yeah.
Yeah, right? So you don't want to be talking.
No, exactly right.
You just want to be talking. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's where those things will be coming out. It'll be very interesting to take your AI note-taking from your client briefing, bring it out, what was it said in this, and then put it into this is optimally what it is. But again, it'll be interesting how that changes the way that we think we approach things. They're great tools, but how much are we going to still be interacting? Now, the one thing coming back to your book is at the end of the day, we have all this technology, and as Meg said, but we're human beings. We're here to flourish. We need to be using the technology to be helping us, not getting to the point that we actually don't know how to interact. And that's probably one of the biggest things is, you know, you're exceptionally articulate and have the same ability to present and things as well. But a lot of people may not have that personality, one, or as you said, to begin with, offline was, you know, a lot of people might be coming in and be able to great using the technology, but can they have a conversation?
Yeah, exactly.
So what are some of the things that you sort of think, you know, if you were to give some tips for the next generation coming through or any professional sort of putting their in, what do you predict are some of the skills that we're going to see that we're going to be needing and enhancing as humans?
Well, there's only one answer to that, and it's soft skills. I absolutely believe that we are, and this is even pre-AI, we're losing that ability to have soft, meaningful relationships and interactions with other people. That whether it's me calling up a well-known phone company trying to sort out a bill and getting an automated voice on the end that can't understand what I'm saying, or I'm trying to order a pizza or whatever it's, I'm trying to do, like, at some point, I just want to speak to a human. Things are already complex enough without adding this technology on top and not understanding how you're trying to, what you're trying to get out of it. So the soft skills, absolutely. I think having that, your personal PC and your pocket being a phone has just sort of, it makes me sort of loathe the fact when some people are like, oh, we're in a loneliness epidemic. I'm like, are you surprised? Like, we are so disconnected from one another because we're so into technology that we're talking about going and living in the metaverse when we're barely having lives in the real universe.
Yeah.
So I think just the boundaries of technology, I think, are critical. And that can be as basic as TV time or what you're feeding into an AI engine and how you're modeling technology in front of your kids or with what peers and things like that. I think that's really important. But, yeah, soft skills, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's more important than ever to be connecting. As Meg and I spoke about that, you know, there's AI out there that's, you know, it's become like the her or she, I forget which one.
Yeah.
You know, the OS. And they've actually found that a boy committed suicide by, you know, interacting with this. And it's hard. Like, my kids sit there and we call chatty, you know, we'll be like, we had to have a birthday party on the weekend with a blue-tongued lizard coming because he was obsessed and wanted to know about blue-tongued lizards. And chatty could tell him a lot of things about blue-tongued lizards, which is fascinating because, you know, my dad's like an excited walking encyclopedia and then we're just doing this and we're like, see, dad's pretty much you. But the thing is, though, you then become so reliant on that. So where are you, how do you make sure, particularly for our next generation, that it's a lot easier to have a relationship with a computer who says nice things. I think they've become a little bit more, I noticed the first versions were sometimes a little bit too nice.
Yes.
They've become a little bit more pushback now. They've actually built that into some of the systems and go, no, you're not always right. So I can't say, great idea, James. Oh, my God, you're brilliant.
But then on the flip side, though, for people that are socially awkward or socially anxious, like I've had some people like, I actually find great companionship out of talking to an AI because it can just sit and listen to me and like not like I don't feel judged or anything by if I was to take a conversation to a peer group. I spoke to another parent the other night who said, look, I just couldn't face having another conversation with my son about Thomas the Tank Engine. So I gave my son ChatGPT and he was still in his room 2 hours later. And the transcript is like 10,000 words. This little toddler just talking to ChatGPT about Thomas the Tank Engine. He's like, oh my God, I don't know whether I messed up or whether I've just stumbled on the best parenting hack of all time. But yeah, boundaries of technology, but then also if people are comfortable with it, that you've got to be free to make up your own mind about that, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we're at a slightly different point that our children are both, you know, mine's just 2 and 5 today, but yours are a little tots too.
Mm.
I think talking to parents who have teenagers now and, you know, what they're seeing their kids go through with social media. We know all of this stuff. I mean, our brains are wired. We are tribes, right? Mm. We like to connect with people. Yeah. That's how we are. We're social human beings. How we connect and what we do is how we've lived. We weren't in isolation. We survived by actually interacting together. But you're right. We also, you know, for example, in Australia, we all sleep in separate bedrooms. We all don't have family. You know, we're all very nuclear versus in other countries and other cultures, that is what you do. You come together, you have lunches, you do that.
Yeah.
So we're still going to make sure that, you know, I sometimes think we're probably the worst at it because we're also from an individualistic culture.
Yes.
Versus a collective culture where I think it will only continue. But for example, the other day I was speaking to somebody who they did this fantastic thing where all they did was just get people together and have a discussion. And everybody in the office, they thought, oh, this will be bit of funny wank. Nope, turned out it was the thing that everybody loved the most. So I think that's the other thing is when we're going into organizations, particularly with remote working, working from home, we're all, it's then actually how we find those real connections, right? Not that necessarily that forced, but it's a little bit like going to pub trivia and, you know, getting to meet people. I would say in this industry, it is an industry that I think does connect very well.
Yes.
Mind you, I'm out and about talking to people and, you know, I'm obviously a massive extrovert. But the same thing is that we need to remember we need to be involving that. So it's the same as we talked about with Meg. You might go into a meeting and everybody is, if you're, these days most of the PCGs are online, most people might be sitting there on their phone before versus walking in, hi, how are you going? Remembering those small things is a lot easier to look at your phone versus putting it in your pocket and being 100% present in it. So I think that's where we need to be present doing things. It's a little bit like if you're doing training online or you get webinars and I'm like, I don't, turn on your camera. And everything else off. And this is what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you might as well not be here because your brain can't do two things at once and it's a complete waste of your time.
You're not engaged.
You need to be there and be listening. Otherwise, you're only, you might as well just be watching a YouTube while you're, you know, washing the dishes or something like that. So I think it's one of those things that we've said, and I think it's the same. It'll be interesting as our children grow. We have all these idealistic things. I look forward to the teenage years when I'm trying it. That's working, that's not working. But yeah, absolutely. All right. So finishing off, is there some things that you sort of think that people could be thinking about, learning about? Is there any podcasts, books, or anything like that that you could recommend to people?
Look, there's one book and I'm just about to embark on reading it for the third time because I didn't take enough notes the first or second time. But for architects, Machine Learning by Phil Bernstein. Right. He is one of the deans or professors at a university in America, architect. Very, very well-written book around artificial intelligence and its impact in the architecture profession and its continuing impact. I could not recommend that book enough.
And what was the author again? I've written it down.
Phil Bernstein.
Yeah.
And it's called Machine Learning. The other one, just because I'm a bit biased, but the other one would be Super Users. Super Users by Randy Dutch. That book is all about understanding your design technology and technology teams inside a business. And if you're going to have a technology team, you've got to give them the runway to really look at a business from top to bottom and understand where there are options to make efficiencies and to make changes. That's a really good book as well.
Well, and it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because most firms these days have, like, most costs always are people and then rent and then technology. I think it's now people, technology, and then
it
rent.
It is, yeah.
You know what you're doing. So technology spend is becoming larger, but when you're talking about automation and AI, what you're doing is just shifting it around. And so, as you said, if we think about technology as about reducing the resources or their time or how can we produce more, particularly when we're in, you know, it's we're at the downturn of the economics, you know, every cycle on every 6 to 12 years, we're at the bottom and we're hopefully we'll go back up again as it always does. Yep. This is actually a great time for organizations to be really thinking, how do we don't want to be fighting for fees and not being able to, we want to do great work. How do we make what we're doing more efficient? And I think now we've got technology, it's always been there and that's what you've always been doing. But now I think you can't hide.
No.
You can't not realize what AI potentially is doing. And as you said, automation is one thing. AI is another. AI is one part of that automation.
Yeah.
You've got to be thinking about how am I using technology more because we are living in a digital world.
Yeah.
It was a delight to talk to James and I always enjoy it. He and I could probably natter on this subject for ages. Unfortunately, we had a few technical issues at the end, so we actually had to cut the podcast short just after his recommendations. If you're interested in hearing anything more from James or myself, please feel free to reach out and we very much enjoy and we'll continue this conversation on AI as it continues to form and develop.